Hello everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of the Read Right to Left podcast, the first for 2023. We took a break in January, but we are back and excited. I am G, joined by my always wonderful co-host, Ray, from Whimsical Pictures.
Hi everybody.
And this month we are doing a series spotlight. We are talking about the 11-volume seinen romance series Sweat and Soap by Kintetsu Yamada, released in its entirety in English by Kodansha. This is one that I can really only speak for myself, but I'm fairly confident that Ray is a fan as well. It's one that is also quite highly regarded, especially for those looking for adult romance and romance featuring adults, most notably. And we have some wonderful questions. Before we jump into it, I just would like to ask, if you are listening to the podcast, whether it's on a podcasting platform or on YouTube, we would really appreciate it if you left a comment, a review, or a rating. It's a little thing, but if you are enjoying it, we would really appreciate if you could do that. But yeah, Ray, how would you summarize Sweat and Soap?
Well, it's full of sweat and soap.
We're off to a good start.
So, basically, we have our main character, Asako Yaeshima. Asako is an accountant at a bath product, self-care type of company called Lelia Drop. And basically, this is her dream job. She loves Lelia Drop because she adores their soaps. She has a very extensive personal care routine because of a particular insecurity that she has, which is that she sweats a lot.
Yes.
And she's very self-conscious about that. She's very self-conscious about her odor. And this really, affects her even in her daily life, where she, basically spends, a huge chunk of her lunch break every day just patting herself down. It's, a problem. But anyway, so, her favorite soaps to use in her personal care routine are from Lelia Drop, so this is her dream job, and she's so happy, with her employee discount in particular. But, one day, she's, at, a conference or something, for Lelia Drop, and she's sort of checking out the, upcoming winter selection of Lelia Drop soaps, and, kind of geeking out about them. When suddenly this man shows up and sniffs her.
It's all right up in there.
Nose up in her business. And he's like, this is so, I've never smelled anything like this before. I need to smell you again. And she is mortified. This is the worst thing that could ever possibly happen to her. What the hell is going on? Basically, one thing leads to another, and he sort of explains himself. He is, in fact, Kotaro Natori, who is a bit of a company celebrity. He's on the product development team. He is the product development team's resident genius, who has come up with all of Asuka's favorite soaps. Wow, what a coincidence. And he says, like, when I said that, you know, I've never smelled anything quite like what you smell like, I actually meant that as, like, a super compliment. I think you smell amazing. In fact, like, I want to use your smell. I've been having so much trouble coming up with the next line of products, and I think that your smell could give me the inspiration that I need. So what I want to do is I want to come see you during the workday every day for the next 2 weeks and smell you. And Asuka is, of course, still extremely unsure about this incredibly weird proposal. but, like, nobody's ever talked to her about her body odor like this before, this huge, like, insecurity that she has. And, you know, there's something about this guy that makes her maybe want to see him again. So...
Plus, also, like, I think she's very enamored with the idea that she could be helping.
Being the inspiration for, like, her all-time favorite products. So, yeah, she's like, oh, man, I could help him come up with his next soaps. So, yeah, that happens. And so he comes during the workday, and they, you know, for the next 2 weeks, and, of course they don't do this, sniff down in public. They go find, you know, a corner, and he just, like, smells her a lot. So if you've got, like, a smell fetish, body odor fetish, this series is for you, because this author definitely also does have that fetish, so. But anyway, after all of this, like, 2 weeks of, like, secret rendezvous, at the end of it, they both kind of realize that they don't want to stop seeing each other, and they don't want their relationship to be limited just to work, and they talk it out and end up just dating normally, and this is all, like, volume one, so
yes, yeah, this is all, like, the first three chapters. It is not spoilers.
Don't worry, body odor fetishists out there, there's plenty more smelling throughout the rest of the series. the primary focus of the series from here on out is their relationship and, you know, the various foibles that come with being an adult couple, both being, you know, working adults. And, you know, the relationship getting more serious and going through different stages, like moving in together and eventually, of course, marriage, which is, you know, not a spoiler because come on now. Come on now. Also, they're in wedding outfits in the last volume, so like on the cover. So, yeah, that's sweat and soap.
That's sweat and soap, and it's one that I think appeals. I think the name is a little bit off-puttish. I don't think a lot of people necessarily picked it up initially when it was first coming out, just because the idea of, like, oh, like, there's, you know, sweat and sniffing and all this stuff happening. And it could very easily be one thing. And it doesn't... Thankfully, it is not that thing. There's two directions this sort of premise can go, and it goes in the one that is a lot more easy to explain to people.
A lot more good.
Easier to rationalize and not feel dirty about. But so, yes, this is completed in English. You can read the entirety from Kodansha. They're also releasing box sets of this series. But it is one that I think once more people found out about it, reviews were coming out, all very positive. Everyone I know who has read this, or at least a majority of them, have really enjoyed this series, notably because of how well it portrays a adult couple. Both of these characters are in their mid to late 20s. They're
Kotaro's 30, but is he, it's like 30? 26 well, and 30. Yeah, he's 30.
Regardless, they are not straight out of university, straight out of high school. They're not necessarily that well versed in relationships, but they're not children. And so, again, with that, with their relationship as it develops over the course of the series, you do have various instances of, or milestones within that relationship that are more suited to a more mature, or a your first like proper adult relationship. Again, moving in together, meeting parents, meeting friends, and, you know, long-term commitment discussions. But one of the other reasons that the series does seem to have such a positive reception, and this ties very well into our first question from at Sunlit Lake, is how the series handles, or the series's approach to kink and consent.
Yeah, I guess on the kink end of things, I would say that like a smell fetish is like on the pretty like vanilla end of fetishes or kinks. You know, that it's not like they're engaging in like BDSM or something that's gonna require much more like involved, like contracts, etc. So I don't know if there's actually that much of a kink element here, other than like that particular fetish like being part of their discussions about like sexual intimacy and the like. Definitely consent is, yes, and the discussions of consent throughout the series are I think a huge piece of, what people enjoy about the series and what makes it so fresh compared to maybe other, romance series on the market, other romance, anything on the market, to be honest.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, everything gets discussed. These are, like, grown-ass adults who are invested in making this relationship work, who are invested in each other, who respect each other, who, you know, because of those things, they talk things out, and they, you know, They make sure each other is, like, comfortable with different things. Especially, Asako has, you know, so much insecurity around a lot of different things. Basically, she's, like, coming from a background where, as a kid, she, basically had no friends. She had, like, one friend in middle school, but she was very, like, horrendously bullied, by her classmates, and honestly traumatized by it. So she really, like, especially at the beginning of the series, has no confidence in herself, really thinks that she, like, only has bad traits, that, like, her stink is, like, just, you know, this horrible, like, thing, burden that she's putting mm-hmm. on everyone around her, unless she spends every waking minute taking care of it. So with that, with her being such an insecure character at the beginning of the series, you know, it's important, and Kotaro recognizes this, to meet her where she's at, even though he'd like to be, like, sniffing her just, like, all the time, just doing nothing but, to be honest. You know, he recognizes that there need to be, like, conversations about what she's comfortable with, when she's comfortable with it, that consent needs to be, like, a consistent and ongoing conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, like you said, like a scent or a smell, quote-unquote fetish, isn't, you know, the most confronting like personal attraction thing. I think a lot of people tend to be fairly attracted to their partner's smell, just their natural mm-hmm. scent. But of course, because of Asuko's hang-ups and personal, you know, fears, that conversation of consent is all the more important and is really great to see. I'm sad that, like, it's such a positive point to say, like, oh my goodness, a couple that communicates, but holy moly, it is not
and, like, actually cares about each other's, like, comfort.
Yeah, exactly. But
and, like, they make mistakes too, because, like,
oh absolutely,
you know, in the very first volume, I think, like, you know, as, like, I kind of detailed earlier in the premise, like, this doesn't exactly start with the most consensual of confrontations. Mm-hmm. Like, Kotaro literally comes up and just starts smelling her, and it's frankly distressing. But it's, like, that's part of, like, him as a character, is he's, like, he's got this incredibly sensitive nose, so he gets around by, like, smell a lot more than other people. He's a bloodhound. He's like, his sense of smell is basically a superpower, which will probably come up later, but so it's extremely understandable that this guy in particular would have a smell fetish, but yeah, he doesn't quite understand that other people aren't like him. And he's somewhat lacking in the tact department. he's basically got the emotional sensitivity of a rock. The emotional intelligence of a rock.
I mean, on one hand, like, once he's extremely passionate for something, or, like, when he's really engaged with something, a new idea, or in this case, a new person, and has that intrigue, he's
all out.
He's all out. He's committed to being like, I need to get this done. It's a big part of his character that he's a complete workaholic. He's just dedicated mm-hmm. his life to his work. He's very proud of his work, which is, you know, fantastic. And it's why he has been so accomplished, yeah. Aside from his amazing superpower sense of smell. He's just very dedicated to his work and holds himself to very high standards. But also, even before they're, like, dating, amidst all of this weirdness happening in the first 2 weeks of their relationship, kind of,
which, like, Kotaro being a workaholic, you know, feels some kind of spark with this girl and immediately is like, this must be so I can find inspiration for my work.
Exactly. But even then, even like after they've spent some time together, like in a, I don't say professional capacity, but it is a professional capacity, at least in his mind, and certainly in Asuka's mind, they have this weird, like, oh yes, it's this is totally work related, nothing to do with the fact that we may be attracted to each other. No, don't worry about it. This is true only for the business. Which if guys, if you're having those sorts of relationships with your coworkers, that's a conversation for a different day. This is not normal.
Or right
But
now,
even
like,
no.
talk to them. You need to figure something out.
But even early on, he asks Asuka, he does like finally clue on, like, oh, are you actually like okay with this? Is this like, isn't this weird for you? Like, even though he does have the blinders on, he really is, it's like, okay, this is great for work. This is everything I want to do. Like, this is giving me so many fantastic ideas for the launch of the new season collection. He's not like an idiot entirely. Like, he does at some point think about, like, wait a minute, we've been doing this for like a week and a half. Maybe I should actually ask this question. And like, I
Of
do
like if
like
she's okay
she
with it.
exactly. She's nice. I like her. I don't want to, like, I just want us to be on the same page. But and then obviously ultimately, I think it's at the end of the first chapter is like when they that first 2 weeks wraps up, and then they end up sleeping together, and then they kind of it they don't continue. Well, I mean, they don't have that sit down to like quantify the relationship till the next chapter. But like, it all of this relationship establishment is very quickly done in that first chapter, and then it's like, okay, this is it. Now we're actually getting into couple stuff.
But like so again, this all starts with a pretty non-consensual encounter.
Yes.
But what really I like about the series is that like even though, you know, these kinds of like slip-ups happen on Asako's end, she has a tendency throughout the series to like say she's okay with things that she's not actually okay with because she is very like she has these insecurities and you know it's hard for her to feel like she's a burden on other people or like she's being too picky. She feels like she doesn't have the right to say no to some things. You know, even though these kinds of like slip-ups happen, with again Kotaro sometimes being pretty dense, as well, the fact that like they're always seeking to try and ensure each other's comfort in the relationship and like double check and keep up those lines of communication and I think be better is what's really important 'cause like there's gonna be slip-ups in real life too, right? You know, these things are hard. People are hard. Communicating with people is hard. Relationships are hard. It's not gonna be perfect all the time, but what's important is that you communicate. When you've done something to hurt the other person, you apologize, you figure out how to do better, and then you do better. And I think that these two, you know, are very good about that. You know, if Kotaro makes a mistake and, you know, talks it out with Asako and she's like, hey, that wasn't actually cool, he apologizes sincerely. They talk through the steps to improve in the future, and then he doesn't fucking do it again, you know?
And the same for her as well. It's a two-way street. And for Asuka, yeah, she pretends to be fine a lot because, again, that is that when she is upset or if she is unsure of herself, she doesn't want to be a quote-unquote burden on the people she cares about. And then comparatively, when Kotaro is, like, upset or has an issue, he really bottles things up. And there's a... there's multiple instances where these things happen throughout the series, and they have to, and over the time you see they get much better at not avoiding tough conversations or you know, tricky emotions. They become better at talking to each other, which is initially helped out a lot by Kotaro's amazing smell magic powers.
And you see he's an empath. yeah, you know, his sense of smell is so good that he can smell her emotions. He can smell when she's happy or sad. He can smell her fear. But it's just, yeah, literal bloodhound behavior. Which is, you know, incredibly convenient for someone who's very dense in the emotional intelligence department. No. You know, it's helpful. Like, he can't tell why something's up on his own, but he can tell that something's up.
And for Kotaro specifically, this is a real, like, growth of character for him, even from, like, prior to the series starting. We know that he's had a whole series of failed relationships, namely because he just hasn't had any... I don't want to say any investment in the relationships, but he hasn't cared enough, like, really.
Really doesn't care. Like,
no, he doesn't.
Because, like, it's always the girls who approach him. He's not, like, out dating. But, you know, he's popular within the company, and, like, he's cute, so...
He's a good-looking, like, well-accomplished, hard-working dude. Of course people are going to be attracted to that.
Yeah, and sincere. So, you know, he's got the playboy looks, but not the playboy energy. There's girls all over him. But, you know, and when girls ask him out, you know, sometimes he'll just be like, yeah, okay. And... But, like, he's not, they're approaching him, and he's not very interested in dating. He's interested in his work. So, like, he ends up not prioritizing them or the relationship at all, and, you know, they dump him for always being at work and not caring about them, so.
Exactly. His time investment, or his priorities, of course, has always been his work. And so the fact that the fact that he approached Asuka initially with just from a work perspective, I think gave him enough of that bridge to, like, then go, oh wait, actually, maybe this is more than just work. Which he'd never had before. Or at least never thought about enough before. And then kind of on the completely opposite side of the spectrum, as we've said, Asuka has always been a little bit of a wallflower. She's never been popular, never had that many close friends, certainly never had a boyfriend, or at least not one who's, you know, any long-term relationship. So she's also kind of, both of them are kind of in this very first proper adult relationship wherein they don't really know what the hell they're doing, but they do know that they care about this person and they care about this relationship and they want it to work long term, because if nothing else, they found the weirdo for them. So they want to try and make things sort themselves out, because these two certainly are a perfect match in a lot of senses.
Yeah.
So the next question that we got was from at MangoMan1, who asked, what would you'd have liked to see if it had continued, if the series had continued past volume 11? As mentioned, the series is finished. In volume 11, it's not a spoiler. They get married. Like, of course they do. Yeah.
They get married. They have a kid. Happily ever after.
Happily ever after. You know, everyone's happy. Families are happy. There's the perfect couple. Fantastic. There you go.
Yay.
Yay. For myself, having read it, and if I want a continuation, this isn't a series where there was like a lot of side couples or things that, or a lot of loose ends that needed to be tied up. I think it's a fairly complete product in of itself by the end of it, or a complete story. But, and this is very unrealistic, not only for like manga especially, but just any kind of romance media, any kind of, I guess, even escapist fantasy, which a lot of romance is, I would have liked to see the characters, because throughout the series, both of these characters become very strong support system for each other. They are fantastic partners. They open up a lot to each other about various traumas and issues and things they've been struggling with throughout their lives, their relationships with other people and themselves, and that's all fantastic and wonderful, and you know, things are certainly helped by a loving and supportive partner. I would have liked for these characters to go to therapy and properly have some mental health support with a professional, but that is entirely unrealistic and wouldn't happen. Of course it wouldn't, but in real life, therapy is good. Everyone needs and deserves therapy, and these characters certainly do.
Yes.
Yeah. I think both of these characters still have stuff in their lives that affect them very strongly. Mm-hmm.
And they both got some pretty serious like childhood trauma going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so being able to talk to somebody to help them, I don't want to say manage that, but to just help them unpack that and find ways to like sort through the very complicated emotions they have with their previous experiences would be fantastic. But that's not what this type of manga is, so again, it's not a realistic expectation or wish.
but you know, we get to make up the story after volume 11, so
exactly. They went to
therapy.
Exactly. They went to therapy, and I also want Kotaro to have a better work-family-life balance after getting married, because one of the big things in the ending is, as Rei said, they have a daughter very quickly into their marriage. They make the decision to... Guess who misses the childbirth, because he is busy at work who had a big,
had a,
big...
At a conference...
launch. It is his like project baby, and I'm like, yes, but your actual baby is about to hit planet
your
Earth
first.
What are you
your
doing?
Firstborn child. Which, like, to be fair, he did not intend not to be there. The child was born early, but he was not on the first train back home, so.
And the caveat to that is they had the discussion when Asuka went into labor, and she told him, "Stay there, finish your work. I know how important it." She is very forgiving and understanding to her husband, because I don't know how many pregnant individuals would be that enthralled that their
I would
partner was
certainly
not
be
there
like,
with
get the
them.
fuck over here.
I mean,
Fuck
me
your product.
too, but this
You
it's
know what?
their relationship. They had the
Yeah.
conversation. They made that decision. It's not for us to judge, even though I will judge very hard because that was still a dumb
He
decision,
does
sir.
at least take paternity leave, so there is that.
Yes. And
Which
like
in
proper
Japan,
paternity
that's
leave.
huge, so I like the representation of both parents taking leave. Even if he doesn't end up taking paternity leave for all that long, I still like just the representation of it as an option, the viable option for like a very career-focused young man. I think that's good. It's positive.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, again, this is not my relationship. I wouldn't have inherently had children so quickly into the relationship, but again, that's me, not that they had that conversation and made that decision. And that's not a wrong decision. It's just not the one I would have made. And yeah, you know, there's little bits and pieces that you can say, well, you know, that's whatever. Is it realistic that a young first-time mother would sell her husband, "Hey, just stay with your product launch whilst I am about to push a baby out of myself"? Probably not. We will note that from what my understanding is, Kintetsu Yamada is a woman, is the mangaka is a woman. So maybe that is her her preference. I don't know. Who's to know? Who's to say? But yeah, I would hope that past volume 11, they have their little girl. They have this lovely, they're a lovely young family. I hope that Kotaro, and I actually think like there's probably a very good possibility that this did give him a little bit of a shake up, a little bit of fear of God into him, recognizing that like, oh, there is family stuff that I need to be more not on the ball about, but like maybe I need to prioritize that a bit more.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but I'd like to think that he learnt from that decision in that instance. And if they have any more children in the future, well, let's hope he's there in some capacity.
Yeah, I mean, he has a good track record of learning from his mistakes, so. What I want to see after Volume 11 is that there is no queer rep in this series, whatsoever, but there is a incredibly heavily queer-coded boss, Asako's boss in the accounting department. Is like he's very flamboyant, and he's always going to their like little girls' nights as like one of the girls, and it's very like early 2000s like rom-com energy.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
But like he's not confirmed gay. Like the least you could do, the least you could do is just like have him offhandedly mention a boyfriend at some point. But anyway, I think volume 12 should be his wedding to his boyfriend. And everyone should go.
I was going to add to that. Do you know who I think his boyfriend should be?
Who?
the extremely intense, passionate wedding planner. I feel like they'd make a good couple.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that'd be cute actually. Maybe he's got like a sexy foreign boyfriend and it's that florist.
I mean,
the
maybe.
Bisexual florist.
It could be anyone.
Sky's the limit. Anyway, that's what I want is Asuka's boss to have a big gay wedding and everyone's invited. And the series finally has some queer rep, which can only make things better. So, is there anything you want to add to that question before my answer segues perfectly into our next question?
No, go ahead. Your favorite minor characters.
Favorite minor characters from @FlamwinkoGirl. Yeah, I love Asuka's boss. His name is Okura. And he's like, he's the cool boss, right? He's the cool boss. He goes drinking with everyone. He gives like relationship advice. But also, like, you know, we see like in their like little accounting staff meetings, he always ends them with like, remember, guys, my motto, work-life balance. Put yourself first. So he's like super non-toxic boss and we love to see it. He's one of my favorite minor characters.
He's really good and he does play a fairly prominent role in the series, especially for like a side character, because Asuka does have a strong relationship, but it's not, they're not very close initially, but as she grows more confident and more, more confident and more assured in herself and her work and her relationship, she gets closer to the people she works with as well. People start noticing her more, which is, very
we
good.
See that the, like, the accounting department is, like, actually, like, pretty tight-knit. They hang out together a lot, but Asuka like doesn't really see this at first because she's always like turning people down to like go to lunch together because she has to go pat herself down in the bathroom. But as she gains more confidence, you know, she also loses some of that sort of those blinders to the people around her. You know, as you get like deal with your insecurity more and stop seeing other people around you as a threat. just like people who are potentially going to make fun of you, right? Once you start seeing them more as just folks, you know, you start to notice a lot of things, and she starts accepting their invitations to go to lunch and stuff, and ends up like becoming really good friends with the people that she works with, including her boss. So I like both of their families a lot. I know you like Kotaro's parents a lot.
I like both of their parents, but Kotaro's parents are very sweet and I have a big soft spot for that dynamic, as we probably all know. Also, they're just like lovely.
Yeah, I said, I was like, I got to the part where Asuka goes to meet Kotaro's parents, and I met his parents, and I was like, I bet she likes them a lot.
Ray, how could
Clocked.
You, how could you tell? How could you know?
We've been friends for a while.
Yes, for too long. You know all my secrets now.
That's okay, you know mine too, so.
Very true. No, I like both of their families, not just parents, but their siblings as well. Asuka's brother's great. He's a good little brother. And Kotaro's sister is a riot. Very, very understandable to their relationship dynamic and how he interacts with her. As mentioned, I personally briefly mentioned, I love that wedding planner. Like, he shows up in volume 10 and he just steals. I'm like, oh my gosh,
He's
sir,
great.
when I get married, I want you organizing it, because he's incredibly passionate about his job.
He's like a parody of like a Ashita no Joe kind of like character, like shonen sports series, old shonen sports series kind of character. Just very obsessed with having been on the baseball team in high school and has to relate everything back to it.
But he just wants everyone to have their most perfect wedding day, right? How lovely is that? Just the most magical day for all of these lovely couples. Like, man, the
Yeah,
passion.
plays it out as a training montage. It's great. Yeah, he's funny. He's funny. I also really like Korisu is I forget her surname. But she is one of Kotaro's like co-workers on the product development team. She's really short and cute. squirrely, as her name suggests. Yeah, she's an early romantic rival within the series. Which, like, for my part, I always hate that character so much.
It's
I
always a
just like,
bummer whenever the rival shows up. You're like, oh, go
whenever the
away.
rival shows up and you're like, get out. Oh my gosh, I'm already so tired. It's just like, I'm like, when does this end so I can skip to that volume because I do not care. So I'm going into like her introduction, like, come on. Come on. I really like how her little arc plays out and it ends very sweetly. And also like it just ends with characters surprising each other by being like adults. Kotaro is like he's quite close to her because she is sort of an apprentice to him. He's her mentor. He was her mentor when she was like a junior developer. So they've been together at work for a long time. And she has like seen him through his long string of failed relationships that he was just not invested in at all. There by his side to tell him how awful he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Kotaro, for his part, is like, for a coworker, he's pretty touchy-feely with her. And like, when we meet his family, it becomes extremely obvious that it's because she is basically identical to his little sister. So when he says that he sees her as a little sister, yeah, no, yeah,
He's not lying.
absolutely.
He's not making an excuse. He just straight
Yeah,
up is like, this
he
is
straight
just
up
my
does not
sister.
even see her, yeah, as an option. Because again, he is dense. But anyway, of course, he sees. She has like spent all these years with him, seeing him treating her differently than he treats any other women in his life, including his girlfriends. So, of course, like, she thinks it's a possibility. She's got a crush on him, which like anyone would, I think. And like, yeah, I think she has a genuine chance. Asako and Kotaro at this point in the series are keeping their relationship under wraps at work, so nobody knows. So, like, it's not like she even, like, knows that he's taken. Like, for her part, he is totally available. And she likes him. So, we have this little, I guess, arc where they're sort of tiptoeing around all this, but eventually, like, she confesses to him. And Asako, throughout all of this, is, like, she can see how, like, obviously close Kotaro is with her and is jealous because, again, she has a lot of, like, insecurity. But, like, I mean, I'd be jealous, too, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I'm not that jealous of a person. So, Kotaro, when... basically, they just talk it out, right? Like, Asako and Kotaro, like, talk it out. Asako's like, hey, I trust you implicitly, and I know that you would never, like, you would never cheat on me. You know, you would never look at another girl that way. I know that, but still, like, it makes me nervous and uncomfortable and jealous. Like, to see you like this with another girl that you work with every day. And he's like, oh, shit, of course you'd be jealous. Like, why didn't I even think about that? And it's like, because you're an idiot. But affectionate. But. And, like, you know, as a result of that, he sort of backs off from, you know, patting, you know, Kotisu on the head or, like, you know, those little, like, physical gestures and stuff. Because he's like, obviously she'd be, you know, Asuka would be jealous. And Kotisu responds to this by confessing her feelings to him. And so he's like, hey, actually, sorry, I'm taken. And once again, like, immediately, like, when he goes home that day, he's like, hey, I gotta tell you, Asako, like, you know, she did confess to me, you know, and they talk that through, too. And then, you know, Kotisu, like, he turns her down very firmly and says that he's in a relationship that he's invested in. She has her little cry about it, and then we see, like, her and Asako have a bit of a confrontation because they just happen to run into each other at the same food truck. And they're like, oh god, awkward. but they also have a little bit of a talk. And, like, basically Kotisu is like, hey, I support you guys' relationship. And Asako's like, yeah, you know, but I understand, like, what you're going through too. And, you know, that's rough, but this relationship means a lot to us. And they just, like, they talk it out. And then it's really funny because Kotaro shows up and he literally, like, runs straight through a hedge to make sure everything's okay. And they're just like, why do you, like...
What are you doing?
What are you doing? Like, we're fine. We're chilling. We're chilling. We got our sandwiches. Yeah. and yeah, I liked the resolution to that. It, like, you know, it values the emotional responses of both Asako and Kotisu. Where Kotisu, you know, like, she respects that these two are in a relationship and she's not gonna, like, go all homewrecker on them. As would happen in any lesser series. And I'm like, bitch, you are 27 years old. What are you doing? No, like, she's not gonna do that. She's gonna go and she's gonna, you know, find a different fish in the sea, you know? Yeah. But, like, first she's got to have, like, a good cry about it, because it does suck, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, it sucks.
It does. It sucks. And the thing is that, like, for a rival storyline, which is kind of synonymous with the romance genre, it almost always happens, regardless of quality of the story itself. which, yeah, it can be extremely frustrating. But regardless, I feel like this rivalry or this jealousy really is grounded in reality of more than just like, oh yes, you know, the bitchy kind of like, oh, I'm going to ruin that person's relationship. The only emotions whose matters are mine.
If I can't have him, no one can.
But also, like, you can understand this is a very natural development of this whole situation, right? Like, it's not like in other series or other anything, movies, you know, the vengeful ex shows up or, you know, wanting to, you know, reignite the spark, or, you know, the childhood friend moves back in town and wants to see, they've been in love with you for the last 10 years. It's not that. It's like, these are people who work together. They're closer than they should, like, quote, should be as co-workers. Like, there's an affectionate, you know, relationship there. So, of course, feelings are gonna develop. And, of course, like, for some people, they would be like, oh, yes, this is obviously just a professional thing. But you can understand why she did start liking him. And you can understand why initially, although, yeah, their relationship was under wraps for a little while, when she did find out why she could, or why the rationale would be there to easily dismiss, like, oh, well, you've had, like, 20 girlfriends in the time that I've known you.
And you didn't care about any of them.
Exactly. So, like, not expecting him to be taking it seriously. And then also, like, again, he sets it straight, like, yes, I'm dedicated to this, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. But then when she meets Asuka as well, of her also just being, like, very committed, not being like a lot of these girls who are just wanting to hook up with this, like, very well-established, hard-working, hot guy.
Popular.
Yeah, guy. Just who wants to net, you know, a high value boyfriend, as you know, some people would say. It's like you can see how all of these people, or all of these characters, I should say, feel very much like the rational reality of how human relationships work, right? Like, all of this could happen in real life, insofar it doesn't feel contrived just to cause drama. It doesn't feel unrealistic just to cause drama. It's actual people, you know, with their feelings develop in very normal ways that have happened to millions and billions of people over the course of human history. These are not unique emotions.
Yeah, it, and, like, you know, there's respect for her. She continues to be, like, you know, a presence. You know, she's on the product development team, so she's a pretty prominent, like, minor character, like, throughout the rest of the series, and, like, is a good friend to Kotaro, is a good acquaintance to Asuka. I don't know, there's just, like, there's respect for her. I feel like the romantic rival subplot in a lot of, like, romance series, particularly Josei romance series, is often very misogynistic towards her. And this isn't, It's not Jose, it's Seinen, but same, like, age demographic. It's just nice. I like that it values her feelings. I like that it values Asuka's feelings, her feelings of jealousy, which, like, she recognizes are irrational, you know, on the side of, like, she doesn't actually think, like, Kotaro is going to do anything. Like, she does trust him a lot, but, like, she still feels jealous, and, like, the series, you know, treats those feelings with respect. And I like that. So.
Well, it also just shows how more emotionally mature all of the characters are in this series, or majority of the characters are in this series. It feels like these characters feel like real people, right? In a way that isn't always the case in, I mean, any kind of manga, novels, whatever, but especially manga. I do find it so interesting that when you do get to some of these larger instances of relationships and how to deal with relationship development, whether it is that jealousy we have, because this isn't the only instance of jealousy. This is the major Asuka jealousy storyline in the series, but we do have an instance of Kotaro being jealous later on in the series, and that was handled in a different way because it was a stranger. It had to do with, like, a situation, and then also him having to, and that was a big point of growth where he recognized his own bad habits and then opened up and admitted those feelings so that they could address them in a healthy way, like a good couple.
Yeah, because he just tries to bottle up his feelings. And, like, be, like, super toxically positive to, like, compensate.
A man not wanting to talk about
not feelings? Wanting to deal with his feelings? Wow. Groundbreaking. Never heard of such a thing in my life. Nah, it's like, even though Asuka doesn't have the supernatural ability to sniff out his feelings, you know, she's still observant of her boyfriend and understands that something's off. So, you know, again, like, all of these problems are resolved with, like, just actually sitting down and having a conversation.
So a proper conversation. They just talk it out. And coming up with a solution, or at least a compromise, and then a commitment to stick to those solutions and compromises and decisions. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yep. It's almost like we're talking about adults here.
Weird. And, you know, now that we're talking about, like, are there any other minor characters that you wanted to bring up before we move on? Because I think that we're getting into individual moments, and that might be a good segue into our last question.
Yeah, I think we can just go straight in, because I think we've talked about all of the minor characters for the most part. All the ones that matter.
All the interesting ones. Our last question, good place to wrap up, comes from friend of the show at Rin Reads Manga. Favorite moments. What did you find the most relatable about the series?
Those are two different questions, but we will get to that. one of my favorite
They're moments, kind of the same for me.
there's some relatable moments that are in my favorite moments, but there's also favorite moments that I thankfully haven't found relatable. And that's namely, there's a very, later on in the series, there's a very powerful, I would say, storyline wherein Asuka is confronted and re-traumatized by one of her childhood bullies when she's revisiting her hometown. She's inviting her one friend from middle school to come to the wedding. And while she's there, one of these childhood bullies runs into her and pretty much just treats her exactly the same way that she's always treated her, which is absolutely terrible.
Literally greets her with this like horrible name that she used to be called in elementary school, which like is like they go with Ustinko like in the English or Kusako in Japanese, which is the same kind of thing. But it's like literally like a full ass like grown adult just like showing up with her toddler and like calling this other grown ass adult a name like that.
Exactly.
Like fully serious. It's like fully wow, serious. This is the most unserious person I've ever met in my life.
And also she has the condescending mean girl thing where it's like, oh my god,
we used to have so much fun.
It's great to see you. How have you been? Wow. You're getting married? That's a surprise. Wow.
Well, because Asuka, like, keeps her, because she's, like, she suddenly feels super insecure and, like, doesn't want to, like, quote-unquote drag Kotaro down with her. So, like, she says that she's single, and this bitch is just like, well, I'm sure you'll find someone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's horrible.
Exactly. And you know, but you know, like, regardless of however she would have answered that question, whether it was, well, again, she said she's single, it's like, oh, don't worry, you'll find someone. And again, that just condescending manner. Or if she had said, like, you know, been a bit more, you know, stubborn and said like, no, I'm getting married and I'm very happy and blah, 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 have a boyfriend. They're just like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy for you. In that same tone, you're like, shut the fuck up. I hate you. Go away. Oh my God.
And it's just like, and she has the realization that's like, she hasn't changed since middle school. And that's part of like her despair too. Of course this whole thing like re-traumatizes her because she does have very deep-seated trauma related to all of these years of bullying that she's been through. And it's just like it just deepens the despair to be like, this woman is a mother now. She's married. Her daughter is play dates with my friend's daughter. My daughter likes my friend's daughter likes this bitch more than she likes me. Because, yeah, that's like the nail in the coffin, right? Mm-hmm. Is that, like, this little girl is just not fucking having it with Asuka. And it's like, rationally, she knows, like, this girl's shy and she doesn't really take to strangers. But, like, emotionally, like, 50 emotional damage from this toddler just absolutely ignoring her.
But, 100%.
And, like, you know, just the knowledge that, yeah, she hasn't changed since middle school, but life goes on. And there's nothing at all that Asuka can do or should do. Except just go home and stew in it. Like, there's nothing. It's just the helplessness of the situation.
And it's something that she does stew in, and that it, again, being re-traumatized, it kind of triggers her into being hyper-fixated on her smell again, and not wanting to get close to Kotaro because she's hyper-aware of, you know, sweating. It impacts her daily jog, which she was very, like, very positive about in prior to that.
She once again stops going out to lunch with her coworkers because she just locks herself in the bathroom to pat herself down again.
And it takes a little while for Kotaro to not... He realizes something's wrong, immediately, but also he gives her space because she tells him she wants space. And so he does that, not really realizing that although she says that, that's not what she needs in that moment. She needs him to be there. And he figures it out eventually, but we know he's a little bit of a slow learner in that regards, but things work out. But this is why I want these characters to go to therapy, because I feel like these are the things you can talk through with a professional as well. Because they deserve it. They deserve therapy. Everyone deserves therapy. It's good. It's good for you.
I find that whole relationship with bullying and everything, I found that relatable, and on top of just being really good and powerful, it comes at the perfect point in the series too, because it's it's kind of an 11th hour thing, but it's something that's been building the whole time under the surface. We know that she's been bullied, but and we know that it's shaken her tremendously, but she hasn't really had the chance to directly confront that trauma throughout the series, so I think as a sort of last hurdle before their happy marriage, kids, baby carriage ending, it is the perfect thing to sort of bring in. Because it's something that obviously she's gonna have to sort of confront, in the face of spending the rest of her life together with this guy, so.
Well, exactly, and I think it's the first time that Kotaro has the opportunity to really see that, because I'm going from memory, I'm pretty sure she has mentioned it before, but I don't know if
he has no idea how
serious,
how much this affects her.
Yes, and so by having that opportunity to understand your partner as well, because it's very easy to see, and this isn't necessarily the case for these two, but it's very easy early on in a relationship to only see the good things, or to think that all of your problems are solved because you have, a love in your life. That's not inherently how things work. But being able to recognize, by allowing Kotaro to be in her space when she's dealing with that, and again being able to talk through it, and him recognizing this part of his partner that he's never really seen before, because for the most part they've been very happy, their relationship, I think it allows that vulnerability with each other. Just that final step that, again, we've always been aware of, but has always been something that's been very proactively avoided from page one, chapter one. It's nice to see that kind of be included, especially before it is that, oh, yes, happily ever after. Everyone is happy and good and gonna lead lovely, wonderful lives.
That's definitely one for me as well, but I really like when they're apartment hunting for a more lighthearted one. And they've got this realtor working with them who is just a total hawk. He's I'm gonna screw these people over today, kind of. this stupid, naive young couple, you know, the guy's gonna do all the talking and the girl's just gonna be like, you know, making googly eyes at him the whole time. And neither of them is gonna know what they're talking about, so, you know, we're gonna get this done in one fell swoop.
One viewing. And
I'm gonna be employee of the month for the 15th time running or whatever. But he gets a lot more than he bargained for, because it turns out these two are very invested in their relationship and in moving in together. They are, and they are prepared. They're prepared, to be apartment hunting. And, what I really appreciate, we see them like working together really well as a team here. But in particular, I like that we get sort of a showcase of Asako's talents, because I feel like Kotaro's talents are pretty like they're on the surface. He makes all the soaps that our main character loves so much. You know, he's the star of the company. He's, you know, super good at his job or whatever. But, like, product development's nice and shiny and, like, interesting. But, like, Asako's just an accountant. It's not that interesting, right? But, like, she's good at her job, too. So this is where we really get sort of our first showcase of, like, what she can do as an accountant. Someone who is good with money, good with numbers, good with contracts. And... yeah, it's like we have this realtor who's super expecting her to just sort of fade into the background and not really do anything. But she's the one who's like going over the contract with a fine tooth comb and being like, so, hey, I'd like you to explain this cleaning fee on top of the key money. Yep. So I enjoyed that. It was nice.
Plus, as a couple, they have very, I don't want to say high expectations, but they have very particular things that they want specific to their space, because they're like, okay, well, we need this, or like, oh, we don't want this happening, because, again, they know each other, they're living together, they know that they want a larger bathroom, they know that they need an area with good ventilation, they know that they want this, and again, this, yeah, this real estate agent who is just like, oh, here we go. Chumps.
Yeah. And then he, like, he ends up having to show them, like, a property that technically hasn't even been quite put on the market yet. So pulling out all the stops. And, you know, he still does get employee of the month for the 15th time running or whatever.
He just had to put the work in, the real leg work in.
He had to actually do his job, so. Happy ending for all.
One of my favorite, well, we spoke about them before. I love both sets of parents for this couple. I really think the scenes of like meeting the parents suit each family very well. You really get a sense of the dynamic between all of these family members and siblings and everything else. But there's a really, really lovely, well, it's heartbreaking, but like a really strong moment wherein Asuka's father reflects on on the fact that, you know, he's the last one to know that Asuka has this boyfriend, and not only has this boyfriend, but like this committed boyfriend with expectations to marry very, very soon. And poor guy, he is very nervous. And I think that there's a real hesitancy, because Asuka she tells her brother first. They're similar in age, and she takes Kotaro to the restaurant that her brother works at. He's the head sh or one of the chefs there. And so he learns pretty quick early in the relationship, and then, like a lot of young women do, they talk to their mothers about a relationship, or and normally mums are the ones who are like nosy and interested in like, oh, so are you seeing anyone, or blah, blah, blah. Like they're typically a little bit more invested. So yeah, when organizing this whole visit, she spoke to her mother and told her about this guy that she's seeing. And then, of course, her dad, out of the three members of her family, was the last to know. And so he really has this regret,
Epiphany?
I guess.
Regret?
Well, he has this epiphany of the regret he feels about not being as involved in his children's lives or his family's life as he would have wanted to be. And again, I think there's a little bit of a complicated relationship there with Asuko. He wasn't there for her birth. That was something that I was like, that's an interesting parallel. But because of work, he couldn't get there in time to be there for her birth. He's the one who Asuko has inherited this like sweatiness from. So I'm sure, although she loves her dad, I'm sure there has been resentment of like just that fact. And also, it obviously depends on the family, but a lot of times, just due to fathers or husbands being out of the house and working, more, they're typically the breadwinners. Not having that close relationship with the family in the same way that mothers tend to do. And therefore, like, he's the last one to know about all of the kids' milestones and all of these other things, and having feeling like he's missed out on things that should be important and are important, but he hasn't had the opportunity to be there when he wants to be there so adamantly. And so it's a really, like, it's very sad, but it's also like this healing moment of like, well, I don't want to miss out on more of my daughter's life. It's really, really good. It's really good. And I think it's also something that gets forgotten a lot when we look at relationships between parents and adult children, of like that complicated relationship there, because once you're a certain age, you're living your own life and you see your family less, and once you get married, that can sometimes be even less than it was.
'Cause you got to balance it with their parents.
And so his want and wish to like be more involved and to like make sure that he's not always like on the back foot when it comes to everything happening is just really, yeah, it's kind of like hopeful. It's sweet in a very like melancholy way, but also her dad's just like a sweetheart as well. Kotaro is like so stressed because he's like expecting her dad to be very
Because
strict,
like
like judgmental. Yeah,
her brother
exactly.
is very protective of her, so he's given Kotaro the rundown on their dad, but he embellished quite a bit.
And
So
so
Kotaro's
he
absolutely terrified that he's gonna meet just
just
like the scariest man.
he He's sweating under the collar, and once he realizes, like, oh wait, oh actually, maybe her family doesn't hate me, and you're like, oh, good luck, kid.
That's cute. However, we have so far failed to mention the most important member of Asuko's family. Her grumpy ass cat, Madosuke, is so cute, and the ongoing saga of Kotaro trying to get Madosuke to like him. Incredibly important content, to be honest.
Well, if you can't impress the family cat, then I mean, really, what are you doing?
Yeah. I like how Keita's like, that's the little brother, is like snickering at him, like at first not being able to get the cat to like him, but in the end it's like Keita who like helps facilitate their I don't know, like friendship. He's like, yeah, that's sweet.
It is sweet. And speaking of sweet, and speaking of family, my other favorite moment is the wedding. Like, I don't know. I just, oh, I'm a sap. It was really lovely and sweet. I got all choked up. The thing that did it, man, the thing that did it was Kotaro describing his beautiful bride to his mother, because we haven't mentioned this, but Kotaro's mother is legally blind. She can't see. So the day of the wedding, Kotaro has to like verbally describe his beautiful bride to his mother, and the two of them greet his parents and his mother specifically. And it's just, oh, it's just so lovely. It just made me teary, right? It just made me teary. I loved the wedding, and it was really sweet. And I mean, you can be a little bit cynical when it comes to, like, certain romance series, and they, I mean, again, they always almost always end with like marriage and happily ever after, and it's easy to dismiss the expected, it's part of the genre, it's expected, you have the wedding, everyone lives happily ever after, it's easy to be cynical about that ending. But this wedding was lovely, and the whole, the lead up to it, their wedding planner was brilliant. The discussion of like all of the different elements of the wedding was very in line from my understanding of how wedding planning happens, and making it suitable for them as a couple, which I think is also something that kind of gets brushed off when you do have a lot like any kind of media wrapping up with a wedding.
In particular, like, I loved when she was looking for a wedding dress because we haven't like mentioned it, but sort of an ongoing thing throughout the series is that Asuko is very well endowed in the chest area. Which throughout the series, I like how that's handled. Like, of course, it's there for like, ooh, sexy, but like, it's also just like a fact of her life. So, we see her struggling, to find like underwear that fits properly and cute underwear that she can like show her boyfriend, which is a struggle. Or like we see her, struggling with again, like finding underwear that does not leave her under boob area just like a sopping, disgusting mess since she sweats a lot, which also relatable content.
Yes, yeah.
But also relatable content, because we are both members of the titty committee here. we both I think have fairly sizable chests. Like you and me, gee.
Yes, yeah. No, I'm you can't hear it, but I'm resolutely nodding in agreement.
Yeah. But and so when she's looking for a wedding dress, you know, there's the struggle there where a lot of like the popular dress styles are meant to sort of accentuate and show off that chest area for women who maybe, you know, don't have so much there as Asuka does. And that kind of dress shape ends up looking very ostentatious, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very sexy when you're a bustier girl. And that's not necessarily, like, that's fine if that's, like, you want everything, like, out there. You want to feel sexy on your wedding day. You want, like, people to know that you're feeling sexy. I think that's great. Asuka is, you know, someone who doesn't want to stand out that much, who doesn't want people looking at her in that way, outside the context of, like, literally just her and Kotaro in the bedroom. You know, she wants to be beautiful, but she doesn't necessarily want to be, like, hanging everything out there, right?
Especially not in front of all your friends and family.
Your friends just, and family. Yeah.
And co-workers, and just,
But yeah, no, so she's, you know, that's not her, that's not what she's here for. That's not the kind of dress that she wants, the kind of look that she wants. So we see her, like, going through her fittings, like, you know, struggling to try to find a dress that fits what she's looking for. And in the end, I think she ends up with a really lovely dress. I love her dress a lot.
It is so beautiful, and that it will be my future wedding dress. Mark my words, right?
Like, I will find it, and if I can't find it, I will have it made.
Pretty much. I've made that decision already. I may be hopelessly single, but I have my dress planned. This is my relatable moment of, if I never see a sleeveless dress, if I never have to deal with a sleeveless crop dress ever again, it'll be too soon. There are some people where, you know, showing off the décolletage is fabulous and wonderful. It is not. When you are typically just a little heavier in your chest area than other people, it doesn't work suddenly, like that.
Suddenly every shirt you try to wear is scandalously low cut, no matter what you do. Ugh. Suddenly anything sleeveless is just a nightmare.
Well, you need, the thing is, if you want to wear something sleeveless, right, as a bustier girl, you need to thus have some of the most elaborate engineering going on in order to keep things in places that you want. And God forbid you try to wear something backless, because that's just not happening.
No,
it's just not.
So yeah, relatable content.
Bye.
In conclusion.
It sounds like such a cope. Like, oh man, it's so hard as a girl with a big chest. But like, no, you guys, honestly.
Giant,
it's not
fucking knockers.
You guys don't understand. Our lives are so hard.
Yeah. Basically, being a woman is a struggle, no matter what your body type.
Yeah, pretty much. But yes, that is... honestly, that is what was the convincing aspect that when I read that Kintetsu Yamada was a woman, is like, that makes sense. Uh-huh. I feel like this is this feels like life experience is this feels more relatable than anything. There are very few men in this world, I feel, who could have captured that emotion in the way that it was. So yes, I don't want to say like overwhelmingly absolutely Kintetsu Yamada is a woman. Manga Update says that they are. I typically take that as stronger fact than otherwise. But if that instance, yeah, was like, yes, this is a woman writing this.
that said, I think my dog wants us to wrap up.
Which is good timing because it's just hit midnight here, so it's time for me to go to bed.
Y'all, viewers, wonderful viewers, this month's podcast has been a struggle.
This year's podcasting has been a struggle. It's just, I don't know what kind of curse we released late 2022, but it's, nah.
But we're here anyway, dear listeners, because we love you so much.
We love you, and we love this podcast, manga. And we love this manga, absolutely. Thank you everyone who sent in your questions. Hopefully our discussion was interesting and fun. We didn't get into, we got into spoilers, but like, honestly, this is not, it's about the journey, not the destination. That's always going to be the case. Read it if you haven't, and especially if you're looking for an adult romance. Additionally, if you have read this series and you're wanting more, and you want, if you don't mind adult content of the sexy variety, there is an official doujin by Kintetsu Yamada and about these two, about this couple, in there. It's literally called like baby making book or something.
Yeah.
Is what it says on the front cover. They said they wanted to have a family early, and that's what it is. It's them trying to have a family early. And that is available in English legally from the mangaka. I will link their social media, and I think it's on Toranana. I don't really remember, but you can buy it legally if you are so inclined. We don't have any other of Yamada's manga in English, although I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some more in the future, just because of how popular Sweat and Soap has been over the last couple years. But yes, thank you everyone for listening. As said, this has been a crazy month. Thank you everyone who sent in your questions. As always, you can follow me, G, at GGEE_reads on Twitter or on my YouTube channel, Simply G. That's where we ask for questions for these podcasts. Also, go follow Ray on her social media, Twitter, at WhimsicalPix, that's P-I-X, or her YouTube channel, Whimsical Pictures. Again, if you listened and enjoyed this podcast, if you're new or an existing listener, we would really appreciate comment, review, rating all of that good stuff on whatever podcasting platform you are listening to. It's a small thing, but it really helps us out. Oh my gosh, next month, Ray, we are next doing month. A creator spotlight. I don't say mangaka spotlight because these are multiple people, but we are going to be talking about the ubiquitous
incomparable
maybe infamous Clamp.
Clamp.
The group of women who have written everything from shoujo, shonen, seinen, whatever demographic, pretty much every genre. I feel like everything they've ever done is available in English in some capacity. They are well loved and absolutely despised. They're very, very polarizing group.
Polarizing.
Some people love them. Some people hate them. Certainly, a lot of nostalgia around some of their their more prominent and popular series, like Cardcaptor Sakura and Tsubasa and Holic and Chobits and all so many things. But we are going to be diving in to the, I don't want to say wonderful, but certainly the wacky world of Clamp and their multitude of intertwining storylines. So if you guys have any questions, if you have any questions, be sure to send them to me on Twitter and we will try our best to answer all of them. And with that, lovely listeners, I hope you had a wonderful time listening, and I will catch you in the next episode. Bye till then.
Bye, guys.